what I remember of the day, well, I don't remember much of the day, but that evening, we'd agreed to go training on that particular Wednesday evening, as the season was due to start on the Sunday, and the lads wanted to get together and asked me could we do an extra training session. We'd normally train of a Saturday morning here, but due to the season starting Sunday, we decided to go for it on the Wednesday as well, just to prepare. We all arrived here about 6 o'clock-ish in the evening. Done the training session, everything went well, everyone was happy. It was a lovely sunny evening. England were playing that night. There was a lot of people out milling around the pub, in and out. I'm presuming they were all out to watch the game. There was no reason to think that anything was untoward. Everything was fine. Everyone was happy. We'd finished the training session. The kids asked me could we do a penalty competition at the end of it. So I said yeah, and we had a little penalty competition which took us about 10 or 15 minutes over the session. We'd finished off. Reese was in a very happy mood. He was really happy. I mean, he was always happy playing football anyway, but I got to take the last penalty, I remember, and Reese was demanding that he went in goal for my penalty. So, needless to say, I scored and he never saved it. Like, anyway, that was it. We started packing up. Everyone started going their own way. Reese, as everyone knows, only lives a couple of hundred yards down the road there. As I was putting the equipment in the back of my car, he walked past. I asked him, was he going home? He said, yeah. And I asked him to get in the car. I'll give him a lift, because at the time, I only lived around the corner anyway. And he said, no, he'd be okay. Again, I had no reason to think anything was untoward. He'd walked that walk 1,000 times. There was lots of people milling about. He was perfectly safe, as he's always been, to do that walk, you know. So he walked past me. I got in the car and I drove 20 yards. Reese was probably, well, 40, 50 yards away from me. And I just heard Sean scream Reese's name in the car. My Sean, rather, me son Sean. When I looked over to my right, I just seen Reese fall to the floor. I didn't know what happened. I didn't hear any gunshots or anything, melee. But Sean heard the bangs, my Sean, heard the bangs. So he jumped as I slammed the car, because I knew Reese had definitely hurt himself by the way he fell. My initial thought was that he'd slipped as he stepped off the grass onto the car park with his football boots on. That was my initial thought. But I knew he'd hurt himself. So I slammed the car on, and before I'd even sort of stopped, turned it off, got it out of gear and that, my Sean was out the car and across to Reese. So he got there just before I did. When I got there, there was a girl got there just a couple of seconds before me and started administering some first aid with him. But by the time it took me to run 30, 40 yards, whatever it was, Reese was lying in literally a pool of blood.
At what point did you realise that he had been shot?
Well, when I asked the girl what had happened, she was shouting to me, he's been shot, he's been shot. So then, I knew then, because obviously all the blood and that. My son, Sean, was hysterical, didn't know what to do. When I'd realised he'd been shot, I'd seen him. I'd seen Reese lying there, you know, and I knew that. Now I know he's been shot, and I've seen the amount of blood. I knew that, you know, there was very little anybody could do. Sean, my son Sean, was screaming to me, shouting, will he be all right, will he be all right? So I'm completely numb by this point. I just didn't know what to do, to be honest. Sean was shouting, will he be all right? And I'm trying to reassure Sean that he'll be fine, he'll be okay. And Sean, my son Sean, he's shouting to me. He's got his eyes open, he's looking at me, Dad. So I'm saying he'll be all right, mate. And, you know, but I knew that obviously he wasn't. So I've got my phone out. I didn't have Mel or Steve's phone number in my phone. So I phoned Tony, who used to help me, who lived around the corner from Mel. So I phoned Tony. No, rather, I phoned the police first, and then and asked for the police and the ambulance. And then I phoned Tony and I said to him, Reese, I didn't know what to say, to be honest with you. I mean, so I just said, Reese has been shot. Can you go and get his mum? You need to get round here fast, like. And he was, as you would, he's saying to me, what? You know, because it's a phone call you don't expect, like. So it was sort of delaying things, I thought. So I started to shout a little bit, you know, get a little bit angry. Not, you know what I mean? I wasn't meaning to be angry, but. So I said, look, he's been shot. Can you go and get his mum and bring him round? Anyway, a couple of minutes later, Mel and Tony arrived. And I never went over. I'd sort of stepped away a little bit. I would have been helpless anyway, because I was numb, I didn't know what to do, if I'm honest. So Mel's just run over to Reese and cradled him in her arms, and I could hear her shouting, stay with me, son, stay with me. And then the police arrived and the ambulance, and the rest is history.
Can you begin to even describe how you felt seeing Mel hold Reese in her arms that way?
No, I couldn't, if I'm honest. You always hear about things on the news that, you know, people are shot and kids get hurt and kids get killed, but it's always news, and that's all it was. That's all it ever was. If I went home that night and someone had been shot and it's on the news, I'd say to my wife, oh, that's terrible, that's horrible, that, isn't it? You know, it's a terrible thing, and but I couldn't even begin to imagine what Steve and Mel went through, what Mel was going through at that point. As I say, I was just numb. And people say, you can imagine how they're feeling, or you can't. You couldn't even begin to imagine. You know, I know how I feel, but, you know, for Mel and Steve, I couldn't even begin to describe it.
How did you feel seeing Reese that way? You knew him very well. Your son obviously knew him very well. You knew Melanie and Steve very well at that point as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of them, isn't it? I just didn't know what to do or what to say. It was, I don't even know how to say, but I always, obviously, and I've always said that I felt, you know, Reese was 11, they were all little babies. Hang on. Yeah, they were all little babies, so it's something I don't know. I couldn't even say it. At the end of the day, a little boy, 11, someone's son, someone's friend, you know. And I felt he was with me, you know what I mean? I sort of felt half responsible at the time. But no, I know I couldn't have been. You know, I couldn't have done anything to prevent that, apart from make him get in my car 5 minutes earlier. But I couldn't have made him get in my car, and there was no reason to make him get in my car, because he was quite safe walking home. And he should have been, you know, he should have been quite safe walking home. So, you know, for me, I mean, obviously, it's something that sticks with me for the rest of my life. And the thought of, you know, it's just the thought of what happened. You know, it's just horrendous, isn't it? It just sticks forever.
Did you know at that point that it didn't look good for Reese?
Yeah. As soon as I seen Reese lying on the floor, although he did have his eyes open, and my son Sean was shouting, he's looking at me. And I've said it before, if I could have snapped my fingers and magicked the paramedic there, there was nothing anybody could do for him. It was quite obvious. I'd love to say otherwise, but that's what I believe. That's what I believe, you know. And I know the doctors, the police arrived, the armed response arrived first, I remember, for obvious reasons, to make the area secure for the paramedics and the ambulance and whoever else was going to arrive. So the armed police arrived, and then 5-10 minutes later the paramedics arrived, and I remember it was just a lifetime for the ambulance to arrive. It was like 15-20 minutes, the ambulance, and it just seemed a lifetime. But I'd, you know, and obviously they've got Reece to hospital and have done all they could, and due to the amount of blood what he'd lost, which he'd lost in the time it took me to run to him, and obviously he was losing more and more, and apparently, I don't know, but apparently they couldn't find the wound. And I don't know if it would have made a difference if they did find the wound and stopped the bleeding earlier. I don't know. But my opinion and my thought, you know, my initial thoughts when I looked at Reece was, you know, there's nothing anyone can do for him.
When you first told yourself that or thought that, how did you feel?
Like I say, I was just totally numb. I didn't know what to do, to be honest. I didn't know. I phoned my wife and asked her to come and get my son, Sean. I said to her, Reece has been shot and I think he's dead. So that was like immediately, you know what I mean? So, but my wife come round and got Sean and took him home. Obviously, I hung around here for a little bit and introduced myself to the police to see if I could do anything to help or what have you. And then when we got home, think, I'm not sure what time it was announced Reece had died, but we didn't tell Sean, my son Sean, obviously, we didn't tell him till the next day. Just thought we'd let him have a sleep, you know.
How did you feel when you first heard the news that Reece had passed away?
No different than when I did when I first saw him, if I'm honest, because I thought I knew in my heart that he wouldn't make it. Obviously I was kind of hoping he would make it, you know, but I was just, you know, it was just horrible, just horrible feeling.
You said you waited until the next day to tell your son Sean. What was it like breaking the news to him?
Wasn't nice, like, and obviously he was upset. But I mean, at the end of the day, we had to tell him sooner rather than later, you know. And I didn't want him to hear it on the telly, or, you know, I wanted it to be me or his mum that told him, like. But anyway, we had to, as I say, we had to tell him, and it wasn't a nice thing to do, but we had to do it. He was upset, and but like I say, he was 11. At the time, obviously, same age as Reece was. But kids sort of, I don't know, kids are dead resilient, sort of. He seemed to handle it really well.
Just tell us about the effect it's had since that day, seeing what happened to Reece. How did it affect your life and you personally, Steve?
Well, obviously it affected me life. It's probably, not probably, definitely changed the way I do things. It definitely changed my life from that point on. Albeit, well, I don't know how dramatic it changed my life, I just know it changed it. You know, in the way that I'd look after my son, I wouldn't let him do certain things, in the way I'd treat people, in the way I'd do stuff, and, you know, and mood swings, I suppose, as well. Not that that's an excuse, by the way, but I, you know, it's just changed the way I think about everything, really. In particular, me son, because, you know, I'm not even going to begin to imagine how Stephen Mel feel to this day. I'm not even going to begin, because I know I can't. But I know that, I know how I feel, even though it wasn't Sean. And Well, you know, I often think that, you know, it could have been me and them, me and Julie, rather than Stephen Mell. And it could have been Sean instead of Rhys, you know. But, you know, it is what it is. And so, I obviously I try to do things for Sean with that in mind, if you know what, do you know what I mean? There's that. But yeah, I'd say it changed my life dramatically. Like, I was just glad that we could do stuff. I mean, Steve got really involved with us after when we set up this charity. The charity we set up wasn't to do nothing to do with the community centre. It was just to provide sort of safe environment for kids to play sport in, and to keep people aware. And try and get kids to join, which we said at the time, join a team, not a gang. And we just focused our time doing that. And football competition every year we had for Rhys, and we'd take the kids, the football team, away to different parts of wherever we'd go. I think the furthest we went was sort of Germany, went to Northern Ireland and stuff like that, and you know, various competitions around the country. And it was always, we always promoted the message of, you know, about getting guns off the streets. Like, so in that respect, you know, at least we were doing something good, you know. And Steve and our girl, Stuart Barlow, were both involved heavily. So between the four of us, we done quite a lot. And the kids were made up. They got to meet lots of people and on the telly, and they were made up, and it was great, because my idea was, the more the kids were on the telly, the more famous people they met, and the more football they played at these big stadiums, if you like. When I say big stadiums, I'm talking Stephen Vaughan at the time, who owned Chester, give us the Diva Stadium, and so the kids played there, and the kids played at Finch Farm, and the kids played at Kirby, and it was, you know, that's what I was trying to encourage other kids, watch our football team doing that, it would encourage them to, we want to do that, you know. And that was the idea. Like,
how's Sean been affected by everything that's gone on?
He doesn't we try not to talk about it too much. But he seems to be okay. He seems to be okay, and he's always made up. And if, you know, if Steve and Mel come to ours, or we meet up with them, or do whatever, he's always happy to have a conversation. We have a laugh and stuff like that. So yeah.
Tell us about the work that you have done. You mentioned it just before, the work that you've done ever since what happened to Rhys, all to try and get guns off the streets.
Well, given what happened to Rhys, and like I say, it could have happened to anybody. It could have been anybody. And I'd hate the thought, and I'm sure no one wants it to happen again. No one wants it to happen again, and we don't want kids hurt or killed or what have you. So I've always sort of... I've worked in social care for 25 years. I've worked with young offenders, I've worked with all kinds of young people, and I love working with kids, you know. They are a pain sometimes, like, well, all the time, but I like doing what I do, and I'd like to think that we could keep kids safe, you know. But it's not only the kids, is it? It's what everyone else has to go through as well, you know. So, you know, I often think to myself, I'd love to have a facility, you know, where kids could come to, and, you know, in the ideal world, they'd all come there and do whatever and go away and, you know, carry on with their lives and get off drugs and get off the streets and get out of gangs and, you know. But unfortunately, money talks louder than words, and these kids see these gangsters, whatever you want to call them, and big flash cars, and half of them aspire to be that. So sad.
10 years on, do you think the lessons are still yet to be learned?
Oh yeah, massively. You've only got to go in the recent months in this city alone, the amount of shootings. So lessons aren't learnt at all. Although, a key, you know, you can go on the internet and you can look at all these government initiatives and about anti-gun crime and the amount of money they put in and the amount of people that are setting aside time to go and do stuff. But I don't know whether it's just me, but I don't seem to see anything happening. And obviously I know I'm not going to change the world. But I'd like to see a lot more done. And again, it comes down to money, doesn't it?
You mentioned the recent shootings. When you heard of people being shot on the street, even we saw a couple of weeks ago somebody being shot dead as well, a young boy at 18 years old. Whenever you hear somebody like that or something like that happening again, how does that make you feel?
A bit sad, really, because, I mean, even at 18 years of age, I mean, a lot of kids won't like me saying this, but at 18, you're still someone's baby. You know, I know my son at 18, he was still my baby, and he always will be my baby. So at the end of the day, it's someone's son, it's someone's brother, sister, regardless of what he's been up to. Do you know what I mean? You don't deserve to be shot in the street and killed, regardless of what you've been up to. But in particular, young innocent kids don't deserve to be shot in the street. If people are going to get involved in that sort of thing, then that's the sort of thing you have to expect. But when it's someone like Reece, an innocent little 11-year-old boy, and, you know, this is what we've got to try and stop.
You've mentioned before, in as part of your work with young offenders, that you've spoken to young people about what happened to Reece. What kind of message do you hope that gives out to young people, particularly those ones who may think about being involved with guns, picking up a gun, or even, God forbid, using a gun?
Well, I worked in a secure unit for 15 years with young offenders, and I was there at the time and Reece got shot as well. So I sort of took my story into the secure units and got all the kids together. The kids I used to look after were all young offenders, obviously, some very very serious offenders as well, from all over the country, and they obviously all knew who I was and knew about me, and I'd worked with them, as I say, anyway. But when I was telling my story, in an effort to make them aware, and when they get out, go back on the streets, you know, hopefully my message will have planted a seed and they can. But they all did show, I've got to say, they all did show quite a lot of respect. Most of them did, anyway. There was one or two who were sort of impossible to get through to. But most of them were very respectful, and, you know, I'd like to think I did get a little bit of a message through to them.
And on this 10-year anniversary of Reece's death, when people remember what happened to Reece and the understandable shock it caused this entire city, what do you hope comes out of it, the message that comes out of what happened to Reece when people look back?
I hope that people think about it and think hard about it. You know, because people can think about it, and it's like me, like I said before, I read in the paper about people getting shot, I see it on the news, but it's news. It's newspaper stuff. That's all it is. It's news. But, you know, when you witness it and experience it at first hand, it's just the worst thing in the world. So I'd like people to think a bit harder about it. Just think a bit harder about it. You know, like I say, it could have been anyone. And the way things are going, it will be anyone again.